Hello, and thank you for joining me today. This is Mindy McNeil, and this is our monthly wine and food pairing. And today we are joined back in studio again by Carolyn Joy. Loved having Brandon, but nice to have you back,
Hi,
Carolyn.
Hi, Mindy. Hi. Good to be back.
Okay, and we are joined by the beverage director at Fruition Restaurant, Patrick Houghton. Thanks for joining us today, Patrick.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, well, we are on to a nice little ratatouille parmesan and a pistachio cake that you brought, and this looks very good. When I was looking at your menu and I looked at the pistachio cake, I was imagining cake, but then I only saw the word sorbet in there and something else, and I'm like, how is this going to happen? But you've brought pistachio cake, which I see the pistachios. You've got a nice blackberry sorbet, and then the parmesan ratatouille. I guess, can we start with the ratatouille parmesan?
The dish itself is just traditional ratatouille play and then variations of summer squash and zucchini. So you have your traditional ratatouille, then pan-seared zucchini and summer squash with oil, salt, pepper, and then brought back into the dish is just sort of pickled summer squash and zucchini, a little ripe vine tomato, and then brought back with fried green tomato itself and then fried green tomato vinaigrette.
For those who might not know, what exactly is ratatouille?
It's a movie that's popular with Pixar, but nonetheless, sort of countryside fare, if you will. So just mainly mandolin vegetables or mandolin summer squash zucchini eggplant, just layered over each other with a little bit of tomato, cooked down onion in the set itself.
So is it traditional to have it mandolin?
Really? Yeah.
For people that don't know what that is.
Mm-hmm. Mandolin is just a razor thin cut, I guess, fruit or vegetables, depending on what you're using your mandolin for. Yeah. But it's a great chef's tool, and everybody should have one in their house.
I was just going to say that, yeah.
But just watch your fingers, because they're quite sharp.
It's not expensive, and you can get one, and you can do carrots and anything, and it will cut them very precisely, very thinly, unless you had the most absolute best knife skills. I don't think you could even replicate
it. I actually broke our mandolin a couple weeks ago trying to do scalloped potatoes.
Oh, yeah, it's great for potatoes. Yeah. So remember that, everybody. Mandolin. One of the tools you should have in your kitchen.
Okay.
Tell us about your farm, because a lot of people preach that they actually are farm to table. But what I love about my neighbor is for sure that they are farm to table. And tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so the farm, I think almost seven years now, was started by Alex when he was at Fruition with one of the chefs named Jimmy Warren, who's actually our cheesemaker out there. I'm pretty sure 20 plus acres, give or take. We have our own hot houses and hoop houses. So mostly anything we can do for the restaurant from the farm, we do. So as the seasons change, our menus change as what's coming up. So we were talking about tomatoes on the way over here, which should be either late July or early August. But right now, a lot of the greens that accent the dishes, sorrel, we do wormwood out there. We raise our own pigs. Pretty neat. I mean, so now we used to have our sheep, but mainly we use sheep's milk itself and just have a creamery out there to do the farm for the farm. But pretty cool operation on the way to Larkspur, or in Larkspur proper, like 40 minutes outside of the Denver.
So do you guys do any sort of biodynamic or organic practices or try?
I'm probably say organic practices out there. I don't know if they're else is into biodynamic, as hardcore as like some wine people. Yeah, you know, but organic as best we can.
Yeah.
They're not adding anything extra out there for sure. It's pretty self-contained, if you will.
So tell me about the fried green tomato, because that is really, really good. And I'm curious. I've made those at home. They're definitely not this good, not this crispy. So do you know what's the coating?
So they're probably either using traditional coating or maybe panko just for Christmas. Mm-hmm. But obviously oil as hot as possible in a saute pan. And they're just flash frying back and forth for just a Christmas across, so you still have texture in the tomato to the breading, but pretty serious and just sort of fried green tomatoes are slightly underripe and a little tart, so more of a savory component back in the dish.
So do you want the tomato to be tart, or how is it?
Well, I think fried green tomatoes, I think, tend to have like a tartness to them because it's almost like an underripe tomato, where ripe vines or heirlooms tend to be a little riper and fleshier, and this is a little more firm. Almost to not as like tomatillo firm, if you will.
Okay.
Itself, but yeah, they're doing pretty good things with it, I think, over there.
Yeah, I love this dish because, for one thing, I'm always looking for ways to eat less meat because I've been reading so much about not eating as much meat. I often find as a cook that I'm definitely not a chef, so cook as a home cook. that it's always a challenge. Like, vegetables are actually harder for me than a protein.
Yes.
But this dish would be very satisfying, I think, to just have. And you don't need any pasta or anything else. Yep. And so aside from just maybe those little bit of breadcrumbs, which I would definitely include.
Yeah.
This is a great summer dish and winter dish, but yes, for now.
Patrick, I would just do want to ask about the pistachio cake, because we've got the blackberry sorbet. And yeah, we've
blackberries
got
itself, basil syrup, and then Fruition Farms ricotta. Mousse brought back over the cake itself and then finished with blackberry sorbet. So it's super fun for the summer. Food Mill supports the pastry programs for the restaurants. So we started an offsite commissary about 2 or 3 years now that supports our restaurants. So these are sort of the brainchilds that are coming out from them. But the cake itself almost molded to look like... I mean, it looks like a Twinkie if you looked at it, yeah. But it's just more texture, if you will. Okay. And the molding on the top of the cake holds in the ricotta, so it stays in the set. And honestly, the blackberry sorbet is still held together, so that's it's pretty good too.
Okay, so Carolyn, you look at this email and you see we've got ratatouille parmesan, we've got a lot of things going on with the pistachio cake. What goes through your mind, or how did this, you know, influence this month's pairing, and what did you bring?
Well, first of all, I looked at the pairing and I was like, there's no way I can find one wine that will go with this really that well. And I have a perfect wine for each of these, but I decided today I was only going to bring one. So I decided to focus on the vegetable, the ratatouille. And I think traditionally ratatouille is probably paired with like a light, bright, fruity red or even a rosé, but we've featured a lot of rosés. So I wanted to do something totally different. And, you know, often I'm looking for the perfect pairing, and that's probably Patrick's job a lot of times. But a lot of people don't care about the pairing as much as they just care about the wine. Like they, and I've talked before about, like, they like a certain wine, they want a Chardonnay, they want a Pinot Noir. And we can go vary from that a little bit. But I thought today, you know what, I think this wine will work. It may not be the best, but actually I think it works quite well.
Yeah, no doubt.
I'm glad that I chose a white, because the tomato, and you know, ratatouille can take on different characters. This one is very light and fresh for summer, and the tomato isn't super prominent because you used a lot of whole tomatoes, and then you've also used the green tomato. So the wine that I chose is actually a 2004. So this is 15 years old. It's from Italy. It's called the producer's Manicor, and it's the Reserve della Contessa. I wanted to do this wine too because we have several wines in the store that have age on them, and I think it's always fun for the consumer if you don't have your own cellar, just as in a restaurant. You know, we store our wines really well. Our distributors store their wines very well, and so here's an opportunity to have a wine that's 15 years old. I'm sure most people would say, oh, a 2004 white wine that is very reasonably priced wouldn't hold up. This wine is, and so listeners will have an opportunity to taste this tonight when we're airing it. But this wine has a lot of savory notes in it. It's definitely different. It's got a nuttiness in the nose and sort of yeastiness. It works great because it melds with the dish. It doesn't have too much fruit for it or too much acid.
So then my question is, because I'm not thoroughly versed in wine, I'm learning as I go, but so if somebody is at home like me and they're listening, I would think, because I, Mindy, think that the older the wine, the better. But so would somebody, you know, shake their head at a 2004? That's why I'm kind of confused.
Yeah, I mean, in certain price points, the older the better, up to a point. I mean, wine is a living organism, so it only has so much age in it, and it kind of goes through ups and downs. So there can be a time when it's drinking great, and then it goes through phases where it's kind of on a downward, and then you might have it another day or another year, and it will improve. I think that this is drinking well right now. I don't know if I would keep it much longer, but it's still what I'm looking for in a wine, and especially a white wine, is some acidity and some brightness. I want some life there. And so this wine is definitely not dead. A dead wine would just like fade immediately. There would be no layers to it. Okay. And I think that this wine has layers to it.
The age is like 15 years of white to Northern, like Alto Adige whites. Alto DJ whites with age are pretty fun. This is interesting because you still have a freshness of acidity, you still have brightness of fruit. It's gotten, in 15 years, more savory in the wine itself. Yeah. And that nuttiness probably just comes from the age itself and maybe a little bit of barrel in the back end, but
and it
pretty
is,
neat.
Yeah, barrel aged a little bit. It's all biodynamically grown. It's a pretty interesting story for this estate. It dates back to the 1600s. The family is from Austria, and we as consumers benefit from their wealth because they put a lot of money into this winery, and the farming practices, their farming practices cost a lot of money, but we're able to buy this wine at a relatively inexpensive price. Also, this distributor is interesting because they have a tendency to release wine when they think it's ready rather than when it comes to them. So, and it might cost the consumer a little bit more money, but they've been around for 40 years, and it's called Rocky Mountain Vinifera, and they focus solely on Italian wines, but they have the opportunity, the means, to keep wine in their cellars, which are well-conditioned, until they're ready to release it. And I think we kind of lucked out on this one that they actually just kind of found it.
So what goes into their thought? I mean, because why would they go against what?
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily the best business model because you're not turning over your inventory in a rapid fashion.
Okay.
But it's just what they do. And they represent a lot of small estates, and their estates understand that they're going to do this. The other cool thing, though, is that sometimes we have access to wines that have been cellared well. And so we can go to them and say, like, do you have a 2004, 2007, or maybe something that either is a great vintage or maybe it represents a year of an anniversary, a graduation, a birth, something special.
Well, and you said you will be pairing this or tasting this wine tonight.
Yeah, we're going to taste this, and I think we might, we have a couple others open. Mm-hmm. We also have some what we call mags. Those are double this size. They're 1.5 liter instead of a 750 milliliter.
Okay.
And those tend to age better because you have more wine in there. Patrick, you know, I have to say it's a little intimidating having Patrick here because he's so versed. Yeah, I know. But seriously.
The shakes are going the jitters now.
Yeah, I'm like, oh no, I have to like talk wine with him. No.
She's going to be on her P's and Q's here. No, it's okay.
So, but we might have some mags open and which tend to age a little bit better. And we have a cool selection of those. So it's going to be a great opportunity.
Great. And then also, too, real quickly, though, Patrick, where is Fruition located?
We're on 6th Avenue, so 1313 on 6th, right past Marion on the left and right across from Joy Wine and Spirits.
I was going to say, that's like we almost your backyard. Okay.
Yeah, we usually try to send people there before or after, you know.
Okay.
And vice versa.
We carry some of the same wines, so, you know, it's easy to say, hey, you can go across the street and grab this over there.
Okay.
And support the neighborhood, you know.
Support local as well.
Definitely.
Yeah, I love that. So I love that.
I think one of the things as far as the restaurant goes is that you do change your menu up seasonally according to what you have available.
Yeah, seasonally for the kitchen, and then the wine, we do the same. We switch our wine list almost every season or every 2 to 3 months just for the fact of the food changes because, you know, wine, in a sense, works with food, but food definitely changes wine more than not. So yeah, it's fun to be creative and produce lists that works with the food that Alex and Cam and all the people in the kitchen are making because they're doing a great job. And for a wine person, for me, it's just about the experience and sort of just the research in tasting so and so forth for wines and food because of the pairings. I love when they work, but I also like to try to fight against them too because you have people that are just in it for wine or in it for food, and then you have people that are in it for both reasons. But for me, I sort of always research a wine list before I go to the menu. But I think that's just me as a wine person.
Well, usually the first thing they ask you, the waiter or waitress asks you, is what you would like to drink.
Yes.
And so you kind of have people are presented with that question first, which is kind of odd because for me as a food and wine pairing person, I want to know what everybody's or at least what I'm eating before I'm choosing what I drink.
I didn't even think about that because I'm always so focused on what am I going to get drink and da-da-da-da-da. To go back, and then I go backwards from what you do, Carolyn. Okay, that is
good. So frequently I'll say I'm not ready to make that decision. and then I decide what I'm going to eat or what, you know, and then it might be deciding what is good for the table.
Okay.
And frequently there's, again, it's not going to be what's the best wine for each dish. It might work out that way, mm-hmm. but it's important that it works to an extent, but as we know, many consumers just like what they like.
Totally.
And that's what you're talking about, yeah. is how you kind of have to fight that dynamic. Mm-hmm. So for Mindy, who likes Moscato, Patrick, you would be really challenged.
Yeah. No, I'm good. Actually, my secret wine addiction is Moscato d'Asti, actually.
Oh.
I'm a Riesling fanatic, bone dry at uber sweet, just because I like sugar in wine, but I like acidity to balance. But Moscato is my secret addiction that I just... I let Denver know, I guess, under the radar.
No, you know this. I love this because I just read an article about the wine business.
Okay.
And because I was looking to see how many people age wine, and actually only 6% of the consumers age wine, and it was thought that 95% of them consumed a bottle of wine or opened it at least within the first 24 hours, which isn't necessarily true, but within about a week they're opening that bottle.
Yeah.
But most people, it was like 60% of the people, one of their deciding factors is what they like about wine is sweet. Mm-hmm. Hardly anybody will admit that. Everybody will say, I love dry wine. But what we know as professionals mm-hmm. is that actually most people, not everybody, like some sugar or ripeness.
Or ripeness that can be perceived as sweetness.
Yes, mm-hmm. yeah, in their wine. Red and white.
Yeah, because you brought, I remember, I think it was in December or January, you brought the Jorge Ordóñez.
Mm, yeah.
And I'm like, I'm afraid to buy it because it is so good. Like, I have a wine display, not big, it's just at my house, but I always buy bottles that I will not drink because if I have Moscato, they'll get drunken. Yeah. Drunken. I will drink them. So here we go. But anyway, but yeah, she brought one, and I'm like,
would you bring in like the Malaga or whatever or the?
It was the number
22.
Okay, the PX
22. No, it's not a PX. It's
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. It was different numbers, and
it was amazing.
It's dangerous.
Like, it's with Crocker.
Okay, cool.
It's a
And she's brought it in because she brought in Moscat before, but that one I was like, oh my gosh, I could. It wasn't a huge bottle. It was
a 500 ml.
But yeah. I was like, I can't take this home unless I know some people are coming over because that could just be dangerous for like a nice weekend by myself. I'm like, oh my gosh.
I have the perfect wine to pair with this. I have several perfect wines to pair with the dessert.
With the pistachio cake, okay.
But I just didn't think I should bring everything, and I have to say that. You know, dessert wines, what I'm seeing are kind of on the decline, which is unfortunate because they're really delicious. Like, I mean, I know my nephew doesn't like chocolate or sweets that much, but for most people, I mean, like you said, Moscato, it just tastes good.
Tastes good.
It's refreshing.
If you walked outside right now and there is a bucket full of Moscato on ice, I would just sit there and consume it because it's just good.
It is very good. Yeah.
It's just good.
So then this brings up a question for me. Why are people embarrassed to admit that they like the sweet? Why do they, I'm a salty savory or I'm a savory type of person?
I think it's progression in palate in wine because I think that Riesling by more means is bone dry than anything else. But what we got marketed first and shipped to America was a little more of the sweeter things. But I think RS, residual sugar in wine, is okay. And I think people just like ripeness or sweetness and like ripeness itself can be perceived as sweetness, mm-hmm. even though there's minimal sugar mm-hmm. In the wine itself, but to each his own, you know. I think for people that get into wine, they usually start with Rieslings. They say they like Rieslings, and we actually poured dry Riesling more than sweet, so we always just give them dry Riesling, and like, oh, it's great. And you just walk through and say, you know, it's dry, so on and so forth, but personal palates. I just love sugar, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't eat a lot of sugar, but I love sugar and wine.
And I'm sure if you had a steak, you probably, maybe you would have a...
I don't eat steak, but if I did, and then my dad's a person that would eat steak but drink Chardonnay with steak.
Right,
because
exactly.
He doesn't do red wine.
Because he likes Chardonnay.
So yeah, it's mainly whatever you're into, whatever you dig.
Yeah, I went...
no judging. You know?
Exactly. I think when you start to learn more about like drinks and food and everything, that's when you say, oh, I really don't know much. Mm-hmm. And also I'm open to a lot of different things instead of saying I only like,
yeah.
You know, I like California Cabernet that's yeah. huge and tannic and oaky and big, giant wine. And that's great. But when you start to learn the nuances of wine, well, maybe there's some red fruit here or there's some acid or it's delicate or it, you know, it's not overpowering. That's when you're really saying, you know, I'm open to this and I'm really learning about this because there is so much variety in wine. And that, as food.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's why I like the I think that's why I like the wine and food pairings, because I'm one of those. I've just limited myself. I'm only a Moscato girl. But then Carolyn will bring in some stuff and I'm like, what? Wait a minute. I'm not supposed to like red, but I like this red. What's going on? You know, it's different things. So my palate gets opened up a little bit more. So I will rephrase. My favorite is Moscato, but I'm willing to venture out.
Nice. Nice. So.
You know, and something else I think to understand about wine is like sometimes what you smell isn't necessarily what you taste. So like with this wine, there's kind of a little funky, stinky thing going on there. But when you taste it, it doesn't, to me, taste funky or stinky.
No, it has more of this cheesiness
yeah.
up front, or button mushroom up front and leaves.
Yeah.
And a little bit from the barrel, but it comes across the palate more underripe and tart and
right.
fresh.
Mm-hmm. So just because you smell something like a Riesling that is, you know, a ripe and maybe peach or mm-hmm. floral components doesn't mean it's going to taste sweet.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, you guys, thank you so much. Carolyn, Patrick, I really appreciate both of you coming in and a nice little salute.
Thank you.
Salute.